stakeholders. My name is Nadia Solomons. I'm the committee secretary to the Select Committee on Trade. We have got a standing apology from our chairperson, Mr. High, who's been booked off ill. So in that situation, we need to elect an acting chairperson. Can I just confirm the members that I have on the platform at the moment is Mr. Moimang, Mr. Dango, Mr. Lant, Ms. Mamarahana, Ms. Mashodi, and Ms. Basha. So we are at the moment creating. Can those members just confirm?
Confirm, President Chairperson. And sorry, can we elect the chairperson? I would venture to state that we elect the Honorable Moimang as the acting chairperson, as he is the chairperson of the sister committee. That's being gender unfriendly. It could be the brotherly committee now, or the person committee.
That sounds better. Yes.
Could we have anything? Ms. Mashodi, I see your hand is up. Are you seconding that nomination?
Thank you, Madia. Good morning, and good morning, honorable members. I am seconding the name of Honorable Miman to be the acting chairperson for today. And also, I wish a speedy recovery to the chairperson again. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mashodi. Mr. Honorable Moimang, you are duly elected as the acting chairperson of the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also confirm my presence. I wanted to check whether is there any different view? Maybe you could do that just to assist us in terms of procedure.
Good morning, Acting Chair. It's Shumara. Good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. Chair, I just wanted to confirm, I heard Honourable Mashodi saying that you were elected the Chair for this session. Is it not possible to elect you as the Chair up until the Acting Chair, Honourable Khai returns? It would make practical sense and make the business of the committee easier to continue in his absence. Thank you.
I would so move. I think it's the correct procedure.
Thank you. I think it's the correct procedure. I so move. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues, for the vote of confidence. As Honorable Mashodi has said, we wish our chair speedy recovery. We are happy that the operation went very well in terms of the briefing that we received from the committee secretary. I think let's take this opportunity to also inform the committee members that the chair's operation went well. Successfully, so also he is currently recuperating from that operation. So on that note, if Nadia can just probably then deal with the apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson. The only apology that we have is the apology from Honourable Hai, and the standing apology from Honourable Lansman as well, please.
Okay. And then in terms of the agenda, you can just slide the agenda, perhaps.
Can you be clear if you can see slightly agenda?
Chair, if I may come in, it's Sonia speaking. Just to note that we're going into a 4.5 hour load shedding at 11 o'clock. So I don't know how long my devices are going to hold out for. Thank you.
Chairperson, that note, where I am, we're going into a 6 hour load shedding at some time. But can I suggest that having looked at the agenda, if we can deal with the in-house issues before we actually go on to other matters, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can you just move the agenda up, Enrico? Just to get the option up again. Okay, we are happy now with the agenda. The in-house matches, Maria, as suggested by Honorable Dango.
Chairperson, the only in-house matter was the electing of the election of the acting chairperson. But as soon as we start, then we go straight into the public hearings.
Oh, brilliant. Then, as indicated, the only item on the agenda that is now remaining is the public hearing. Let us take this opportunity to...
No, Chairperson, if I may, my apologies once again. There is the issue of the travel to the UK and the dates thereof. I've been in touch with both the staff and I've been in touch with Durko. I think if we leave Germany out because it's over the Easter weekend, that period, and only do the UK, we can actually get the trip off and going. I wonder if the staff would wish to comment upon that particular matter.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. Maria? Is the team ready to deal with that? Or there's still a consultation that must happen?
Chairperson, Rupeka has indicated that he would be in contact with you. I think that matter might be discussed at tomorrow's meetings. And we will also avail ourselves the support staff to the select committee and say it's ready. And we can actually go into that matter in more detail.
Okay. I think then that's fine. Let's defer the matter to tomorrow. We'll then probably allow the team to have thorough engagement for their sister management team, and then indicate that the public hearing is on the performance protection and copyright amendment bills. The members will remember that these two bills come from the first administration. It was referred back to Parliament by the President, and the process got kick-started, and the NA then was able to pass the bill, and then it was referred to the National Council of Province, and as a result thereof, a process plan was developed and adopted, and among them, we then had to engage with the public in terms of their views in response to the invite that we afforded them. We one day, without any use of time, then indicate that a team of participants will make presentation, and then probably just cut some questions, and then we move to the other. I think if we move in that fashion, then it becomes much more easier to allow members to follow without necessarily having to wait for the rest of the presentations to be made. But like I said, we'll have an opportunity as the committee to make a reflection in terms of the presentation made. But what is quite critical is for us just to probably start asking questions from the presentation. And in terms of the lineup from now until lunch, we'll start with the the media, and then SAPLA, and then the CPA. So without any waste of time, if kiwi, it's ready, and the floor is there.
Chairperson, I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like a heckler. That's what I'm sounding like this morning. Chairperson, I have a bit of a challenge at between 1 and 2.30. I have to take my daughter to hospital. Between the lunch period, maybe I'll be half an hour longer. If it can that just be accommodated. Thank you.
We will also have 1 hour lunch just to allow the team to also have lunch and then come back around that time. Thank you, Honorable Ambassador. Over to you. To ETV Media.
Good morning, Honourable Members and Acting Chairperson. My name is Philippa Rafferty. I represent ETV and the eMedia Group. I was just wondering, for the presentation, is it going to be shared on your side, or must I try and share it from my side?
Ms. Rafferty, you have been granted the hosting rights to project the presentation on your side.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. That's before that, Maria, let's just check the time slot there so that there is no giving the shame that we have. In terms of the, how many minutes do they have?
30 minutes, Chair, from 10 plus 10 to 22:11.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, thanks. Over to you, Rafferty.
Thank you very much. I'm just waiting for my colleagues to share the presentation. Just give us one. Then let me just. Are you able to see the presentation, Acting Chairperson?
Yes.
Okay, great. Great, then we can begin. As I said, thank you very much, Honourable Members. Thank you for this time, this opportunity for us to present to you today on the Copyright Amendment and the Performance Protection Amendment Bills. I'm just going to get straight into it, given the limited time period. No, it doesn't want to work. As I explained, my name is Philippa Rafferty. I'm the Head of Legal and Regulatory Affairs at eMedia. I have with me today colleagues from the law firm of Rosengarten and Feinberg, that is David Feinberg and Daniel Baskin, who will be assisting me. And, you know, at the outset, we just wanted to express that we have participated in this process around the Copyright Amendment Bill from the start. We're very grateful for the changes that have been made and the process getting up to this point. We do still feel that there's a number of issues that possibly need to be addressed, which is why we wanted to participate in these hearings today. And that is what we will be discussing. So if I could just do a quick introduction about eMedia as a group so you understand who we are. You will know, of course, that eMedia has a wide range of interests across broadcasting and production. So, of course, there's ETV, which is a licensed commercial free-to-air broadcaster. ETV has been around since 1998, so we're going on into our 25th year of broadcasting. And obviously, you know, we have our flagship channel, which is ETV, but of course, there are a number of other channels, including a number of other free-to-air channels, including eMovies, eExtra, eReality, and these channels are broadcast across a number of platforms and are available as widely as possible. And that includes platforms like Analog, DTT, we're on satellite being DSTV, and of course our own OpenView platform, which has been around for a number of years. Then, of course, you'll know that eMedia has interest in, we run the 24-hour news channel called ENCA, which is broadcast on DSTV. And most recently, we launched our own video on demand platform, which is called EVOD, which we launched in 2021. And this offers our content as well in the online space. And it offers it on a free and paid for basis. So if we can move on just to some opening comments. As we said, we are very grateful for this opportunity to participate in these hearings. And we very much support the process that has taken place so far, and we support the progressive steps that have been taken to modernize this legislation. I think it's important to note that obviously this copyright legislation is far out of date, and due to which we've seen, particularly in that, we do believe that any changes need to be future-proofed, and updating the legal framework needs to be undertaken in a manner which makes it as future-proof as possible. That's just given the technical infrastructure that is required for broadcasting and how quickly that can change, and which we have seen that change in the last 20 so years of ETV being in operation. And, you know, as we say, any legislation, in our view, that would have the ability to reduce the rights of the copyright owner would negatively affect on the viability of broadcasting. And that is our main concern, I suppose, over the current draft of the bill, is that we do not want that legislation to negatively affect the creation of copyrighted works, and we believe that any new legislation needs to modernize our approach to copyright, but while maintaining the interest and the commercial viability of broadcasting and television production, which is really an essential service. And I say that because broadcasters are essential not just as a part of our economy and commercial viability, but they're also an essential part of our democracy. Broadcasters have a duty to provide news, current affairs, and entertainment. And these duties are obviously set out as part of Section 16 of the Constitution, which guarantees our right to freedom of expression, and that includes the right to receive information. And this ensures that broadcasters are critical agents in ensuring the public has the ability to receive information. And as a licensed broadcaster, of course, ETV has a number of license conditions, which is attached to our license, and these include conditions around the broadcasting of local content. We are required to broadcast a minimum number of hours of local content every year. It also includes license conditions around skills and training, and you know, we adhere to those conditions very strictly. So now if I can hand over to my team members, start by discussing some further aspects. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Select Committee. Despite the name that appears at the bottom of your screen, my name is in fact David Feinberg, and I'm a partner at Rosengarten and Feinberg Attorneys. It's a great honor to address you this morning on two bills that we're discussing that, if passed in their current form, will not only have an impact on e-media, but on broadcasting and on content production as a whole. E-media has made a substantial written representation to you for this morning's purposes. Given the understandable time constraints that we're under, we will not deal with all of our submissions as made in the written representations, and we're going to focus on two primary issues, those being the value chain, which I will address, and the issue of ephemeral rights, which my colleague Daniel Baskin will address. Pippa gave you a comprehensive background about e-media. We're sure, and I suppose we hope, that some of you might watch soapies like Scandal, which has just been renewed for a new season commencing in April 2023. the importance of content production in our economy cannot be underestimated. Television series like Scandal alone results in over 100 people in the supply chain being compensated. As an entity who commissions TV series, ETV pays for the creation of these TV series, and when I say TV series, I'm also referring to films, but I'll just use those terms interchangeably for current purposes, and these are then made available via its platforms. It's imperative that ETV has control over the TV series that it produces. And of course, this stands to reason. If you make something that you want to sell in a market, you need to ensure that you have control over the supply of the product. This is necessary to recoup costs, hopefully turn a profit, and then continue to create content and contribute to an industry and to the economy. So that I can give meaning to the comments that I'm going to raise on the two bills, a little bit of context around the production process. So for this, I'd like you to imagine that you're sitting at home, you're watching your favorite television series, and what you're seeing when you're watching that series is the film that is in front of you. And as part of that, you will see different actors. They will be reciting different words that emerge from a script. And you may also, for example, hear music in the background at different parts of the production. So when you see it in this way, you see the film. But if you are to take off that lens of how you watch it as a viewer, and you are to apply a legal lens to how you view that content, it becomes a little bit more complicated. Because what we are then looking at when we are watching a film is we are watching the combination of a number of copyrighted works in the first place, as well as the fixation of a number of different performances of the performers who render their performances on that production. So to give you an example from a copyright perspective, the kinds of works that you will see when you watch a film are obviously the cinematograph film itself, which in the parlance of the Copyright Amendment Bill is now referred to as an audiovisual work. You will, of course, be listening to the dialogue that emerges from a literary work, which is the script. And you'll also be hearing musical works and the recordings, the sound recordings of those musical works. All of that is what is coming through when you watch that content. Included in this, as I mentioned, are a number of performances that are then fixated. Now, importantly, the works that are created, so in the example I just gave, cinematograph films, literary works, musical works, sound recordings, those are the subject of copyright. The fixation of the performances are not the direct subject of copyright. These are the subject of performers' rights. And this is, of course, relevant when you consider that we are looking at two bills. One, the CAB, whose focus is or ought to be on copyright, and the other, the PPAB, which deals with performer rights. Next slide, please. Thank you. So a quick summary is that ETV creates film or series that people watch. These films are made up of a number of copyrighted works and the fixations of performances over a number of individuals. And this content needs to be made available to the public. And in order to do that, ETV requires control over the film. Any diminishment of that control could impact on the commercial viability of the production as a whole, as Pippa alluded to. This isn't only for ETV, of course, the same can be said of film producers in general. And this brings me to present our particular concerns that I'm going to address you on this morning on Section 8A of the CAB and Section 3A of the PPAB. These two sections seem to do similar things. They give protection to performers whose performances are fixed on audiovisual products. The challenge in the first place is that we have these two sections in two bills regulating one issue. And on that note, the first point that we make in our submissions is that the matter of performers' protection is distinct from matters of copyright. And this is why the Performers Protection Act exists, to regulate this very issue. And we therefore made the submission that the issue of performer remuneration ought to be regulated by the PPAB and not by the CAB. I'll explain to you that that is not the case in the way that the current bills are drafted. But it is for this reason primarily that we have proposed in our submissions that Section 8A of the CAB should be removed. You might ask, well, what's the harm if it stays in the CAB as well as in the PPAB? Well, if it stays in, then we submit that the two sections as they appear in both of these bills are irreconcilable. Both sections say that performers who perform on audiovisual works must be compensated. But the CAB, on the one hand, says that this compensation is predicated on the use of copyrighted works, whereas the PPAB, on the other hand, says that the compensation is for the fixation of the performer's performance. Those are two distinct matters, and the question then arises as to whether it is intended that a performer will receive two royalty streams, one arising out of the CAB and another arising out of the PPAB for slightly different things. And this is not clear from the bill. A further concern that arises is that it concerns the form of compensation. In the PPAB, the form of compensation that is required to be paid to a performer whose performance is fixed is a royalty or equitable remuneration, the one or the other. Whereas in the Copyright Amendment Bill, that bill states that the remuneration is a royalty. And no mention is made of equitable remuneration in this section of the Copyright Amendment Bill. To make matters a little more confusing is that Section 8A of the CAB says that that section is subject to the Performers Protection Act. And again, we submit that all of these challenges will be overcome if Section 8A of the Copyright Amendment Bill is removed and that matter is left in the Performers Protection Amendment Bill for regulation. Turning to slide 13. If it is the case that Section 8A of the Copyright Amendment Bill in fact grants a performer an immutable right to a royalty, then this is opposed by us. And we say this because we want to make the point that the amendments don't distinguish between the different types of performers that render their performance on an audiovisual work. And the reality is that in any given work, you will have the featured actors, you will have minor actors, and you will also have extras who participate in that. So to give an example, from my own life is back in the day, probably around the same time that ETV started first broadcasting, for extra cash, I would put up my hand with an agency and I would get gigs where I would act as a background or an extra on certain soapies like Generations and Sea of Adelan. My job wasn't very difficult. All that I had to do was to sit in the background, pretend I was reading a magazine or something like that, and I'd get paid hard cash in the form of a couple of hundred rand in a check, and that's what I needed, and I was elated to receive it. And at that time, had a producer said to me something along the lines of, look, David, come in, we're going to have you, you know, perform on the show, you're going to stand in the background for a couple of hours, you're not going to get a check, we're not going to pay you anything for it, but don't worry, somewhere down the line, we're going to give you a royalty, and there's no guarantee that you'll receive that royalty, but you might, and that would be cool if you were to receive it. And to that proposition, 18-year-old me would have said, no thanks, because I needed the cash. And that's part of the challenge, is that the bills do not distinguish between the types of performance. While a royalty might be satisfactory compensation for a lead actor, it probably won't be for an extra. They would have to settle for the possibility but not the guarantee of being compensated in the future. The performer would also have to know in that circumstance that the royalty that they were going to be paid may or may not be paid depending on whether the film turns a profit or how that royalty is to be calculated, a point that I must say is not dealt with in the legislation. And also it would have to be shared with a pool of different performers. So that royalty would be considerably fragmented. Next slide, please. We We of course accept that there is space for regulation to bring balance to the creative industries to ensure that performers are protected. And this is a noble and needed intervention, but it's important for us to mention that a royalty is not a panacea. What makes matters worse is that the CAB provides that the minister will be granted the powers to regulate the contractual terms that apply between the parties. So the minister is granted the right in terms of the CAB to determine the royalty that is applicable. And the fact is that these matters concern a complex series of commercial negotiations and transactions. That's what goes into the making of a television series. And a royalty is not the silver bullet to fix the lamentable situation of many South African artists who struggle and sometimes die as paupers. Other legislation has, of course, worked to protect vulnerable persons, such as the Consumer Protection Act. And this act protects consumers from unfair agreements and unfair business practices. However, in giving such protections, the CPA does not go so far as to have the minister prescribe what price needs to be paid for a particular good or for a particular service. That would be a step too far, and that is what the CAB states that it will do. It will provide for the price that a producer or an owner needs to pay for the services of a performer. The point is, the mandatory payment of a royalty will not fix the problem of the poor treatment of many performers, and this is a larger issue that we say requires political intervention. Just going to slide 15, a brief summary. We suggest that Section 8A be removed from the CAB. We leave performers' rights in the Performers Act. We remove the restriction on the party's freedom to contract, and we remove the power of the minister to determine the royalty rate and contractual terms. I'm moving on to my final slide before I hand over to Daniel to address a distinct, very different concern. This slide relates to Section 22 of the Copyright Amendment Bill. And that section states that notwithstanding the life of copyright in literary work, Section 22 says that there is a term limit of 25 years for the assignment of a work, of a literary work for those rights, and that those that there is a compulsory reassignment to the author. That means that after 25 years, if there is a script that is incorporated in a film, the rights in that script will revert to the author. And it must be pointed out that there may be many authors of a script. And what then happens is that, from our perspective, is that after 25 years, there may be a number of different authors that we're going to have to try to deal with to secure the rights to continue to make the film that we've invested in, to continue to make that film available to the public. And if we are unable to do that, and we may not be dealing with those authors directly, we may be dealing with their descendants and executives at that time, if we are unable to secure those rights, then the film or the audiovisual work could face an early death, and we won't be entitled to exploit it. That's because if we don't clear the rights from all owners of the copyrights, we would not be entitled to sell and continue to make our film available. If we did that, we would face possible infringement proceedings, and there would be a good basis for those infringement proceedings to be commenced. It's also worth noting on this point that the 25-year reversion provision also applies to musical works. So if you have someone who has composed the score for your film, after 25 years, that is placed in jeopardy, and you have to go back and try to secure the rights. It's untenable. Section 39B of the Act suggests that we would be prevented from contracting out of that. And we say that these provisions need to be removed too, because they will impact the industry in such a way that there will be a chilling effect on the ability of people to invest in the film market. If people invest in film, they need to know that they have the rights to receive revenue for the life of copyright, and if that is then diminished because it is placed in jeopardy through performers' rights, we then have a real challenge. On that note, and of course I've gone through this as quickly as I possibly can, I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you very much for hearing us, and my colleague Daniel Baskin will now address you on the ephemeral right. Over to you, Daniel.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, I note that we started 5 minutes late in our allotted time. We would just request an indulgence to go 5 minutes after our allotted time, if that is in order. If not, we will do our best to fit in our submissions in the next 5 minutes.
We will appreciate that you speak within 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will do my best. So, Honourable Chair, on that note, I'm going to be dealing with a very specific issue. Mr. Feinberg dealt with quite a broad overview of the content commissioning chain and the effects of the bills on that process. I'm going to be dealing with something quite a lot more straightforward, and it's called the ephemeral right. It's a right afforded across most foreign jurisdictions to broadcasters. And the right, if I can summarize it, it's to cure a very simple issue faced by broadcasters when broadcasting live events. And the issue is this. When a broadcaster is out broadcasting news or perhaps broadcasting a sports event, they may incidentally and unintentionally broadcast or reproduce a work of copyright in that broadcast. And they may do that without the authorization of the copyright holder. Now, if I can give you some examples of how that might occur, I'll just give you one considering the time we have. If you could imagine for one wonderful moment that South Africa is hosting the Rugby World Cup once again, and imagine even more wonderfully that the Springboks have won. There's a song plays out in the stadium, everyone is dancing, having a wonderful time because we've just won. The broadcaster who is recording or broadcasting the event, that song, maybe let's say in Kalakata for the purposes of argument, is now coming through your speakers at home. What's happening on a legal front is that that musical work, the literary work and the sound recording, which makes up that song, we don't need to go into the specificities of the music industry at this point, but what's happening is that that work is being reproduced by the broadcaster without the consent of the copyright holder. This, of course, is an issue. So the way legislation around the world has dealt with this is by introducing the ephemeral right, and we have it in our Copyright Act. It's at Section 12, Subsection 5A and B. Now, considering the limitations I have on time, I won't be able to read out the right to you, but I will. The section will show up on screen in the next slide, and I can say to you that our submissions are not a criticism of this, because the bill maintains the right nearly word for word. But what eMedia thinks, there's a very good opportunity here to extend the right. The right itself is subject to two conditions. The first is that the ephemeral recording must have resulted as of the lawful activities of the broadcaster, meaning it cannot be someone who is not a licensed broadcaster, or it cannot be an act that is intentionally trying to use someone else's work without their consent. It has to be a lawful broadcast vis-a-vis our broadcast of the live sports event example. The other requirement is it has to be destroyed within 6 months unless it is of an exceptional documentary nature. Now, our immediate submission on this point is that the opportunity here should be to extend the right, and it can be extended as follows. One, the condition that it has to be an exceptional documentary nature before it is deleted should be removed. Further, the temporal limitation, i.e. the 6 months we have, should be removed. And the answer is quite simple. Whether something may be of an exceptional documentary nature could probably only, well, more than likely not be known after a period of 6 months. It also ignores the fact that in the case of a broadcaster, a news broadcaster is probably their archive seen as a cumulative whole, includes the national history of a country through reporting news on a daily basis. So that the value in that archive should be maintained. If any of the broadcasts include an ephemeral recording, there's a statutory obligation to delete that. Rather, we say the exception should remain, but the two obligations to delete based on time or based on it being of a documentary nature should be removed. And any further use of those recordings should be subject to fair practice, which is a position the Act already regulates. I hope I've managed to summarize that in 5 minutes. These submissions are set out in our written submissions, but eMedia would like to thank the Select Committee and thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity to present. And should there be any written requests for any drafting suggestions or any further questions, we would welcome the opportunity to submit those. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. You were very efficient child. You were just underlining yourself.
Yeah, sorry, I already went through it, but I hope the point was made. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to Emilia for the presentation. We have met the definitely
So what I will do at this point in time, I will ascertain from members as to whether are there any clarification questions that they want to pose. No discussion, because we'll have ample opportunity as a committee to engage. Just clarification questions. I've noted the end of Honorable Protester. The floor is yours.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, if you don't mind, I'm going to leave my camera off because of low signal and you know these difficulties. I do apologize, Chairperson. If my signal improves, I will go back to camera. But okay. Chairperson, just two questions I want to ask to the presenters, and I thank them for their presentations. And the first one is, you know, the issues they have raised are very serious, particularly the issue about the minister being able to determine royalties, which I think, frankly, I must express the opinion that that seems to be a massive overreach of the ministerial power in this regard. So the first question I have to ask, and I don't want to put the presenters on the spot, but if the bills go through as they currently are, with the difficult consequences that they will present, does eMedia is eMedia contemplating litigation in this regard? I think that's extremely important to know for us as a panel, as a committee. And then secondly, another bill that we're dealing with tomorrow, Chairperson, is the expropriation bill. And the expropriation bill defines property not just as immovable property, but it leaves it wide open. Of course, it defines something that is very relevant to this entire discussion, which is intellectual property. And what is the presenter's feelings about the fact that, in essence, if the expropriation bill goes through as it is, that there will be the power of the government to expropriate intellectual property? Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also wanted to speak to the intellectual property aspect, but my colleague, Ms. Honourable Bart Seth, has done so. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Honourable Bashar. Let me check whether there are any other members. Maybe I must then come in. Just to put some questions from my side, because I think the presentation at the beginning touched on trying to explain to us what will then change and change. Say that the commission a production company upon payment to produce a series, and that a commission will be encased in the written agreement, and in order to have a totality of control in terms of all right, you then have all right to each of the entities. So, therefore, the commissioning party will then exercise all the above rights that you are exercising in terms of assessing rights
but also controlling all this life. If I heard you correctly, you are saying that section 8A and section 3A will be an interference in exercising all the created rights or it is an interference in the creation of the bundle of rights and the exploitation of work. And you are saying that it is not beneficial to the creators and authors it is meant to protect. The question that I want to ask is, don't you see this both the Section 8A and the 3A in the value chain as part and parcel of burden in the ownership in terms of control. The second point is if you see the two sections in terms of the value chain is an existential threat to the media production as a whole. Don't you think that the intervention by the minister is particularly aimed at protecting some of the rights that necessarily might not have been captured by the old act? And what is your view with regards to what would you advise the committee with regard to other presenters that are supporting the act, not only by the fact that our copyright act is old and it has to be brought in line with the
with the new law, but also what's happening in other countries. Thank you. Over to you. Thank you, Chair. I'll start by addressing the first two questions which were raised by Honourable Rataseth, and then I'll hand over to my colleagues to address the questions that you have just raised. So the first question, which you expressed, Honourable Member, being whether or not we are contemplating legal action if the bills go through in their current form. I think all broadcasters would seriously consider legal action. This is obviously not something that just affects ETV or eMedia. It would affect DSTV. It would affect the SABC as well.
I think our stronger argument on that one is it's kind of a rash.
Sorry about that. And it would certainly certainly be something that we would contemplate legal action over. And then the second question around the expropriation bill and the expropriation of intellectual property, I think that is also a serious concern for broadcasters, which really, as we've explained, a lot of our assets as a broadcaster are tied up in IP itself, and I think the current form of the expropriation bill would have a chilling effect on that commercial viability of being able to do productions, and it would be a very serious serious threat that we would have to consider how to deal with. I'm going to hand over now to my colleagues to deal with the other questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And you, Robert, over to you.
Thank you. So, Chair, to your questions concerning the operation of the two provisions that we've made reference to and the potential existential threats to the industry considered against, I think, the opportunity to find a way to give further protection to performers. That is a much needed intervention. I think that, you know, as a general proposition, we accept that some form of political intervention would be required or would be welcome to give further protection to performers. There is no doubt, and we all know of stories of great South African talents who have struggled to make ends meet and some who have died as paupers. But what we say in that respect, though, is that the manner in which that is, if that is intended to be dealt with in the form of the protection, the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, by imposing a royalty that will be determined by the minister, our submission, and obviously this is contained in detail in our written submission, but in our verbal submission too, is that the royalty is not going to be the remedy to that issue, and that it is not an appropriate place to legislate in that respect. So whilst the purpose is a welcome purpose, the solution, if it is that is being offered in the legislation, does not, on a balance of all considerations, does not come to assist the industry, or we would say, for the examples that I gave in the written submissions, all performers too, because there are too many questions that arise as to what that royalty is going to be, how it will be determined, and also whether it's payable on a profit position or not. So then you are placing risk on the success of a production in the hands of performance. And for that and other reasons, we say that it is misplaced. I think that as a general proposition as well, as whilst we are focused on Section 8A and Section 3A as potential existential threats to the production industry, we have also referred to other concerns in our written submissions. And in particular, I took you through the concern around the reversion of the rights in literary works, which could also spell, not to sound dramatic, but it is an apt way to describe it, is it could spell an early death in the life of an audiovisual work that needs to run for the life of copyright in order for investors to be attracted to that type of market. And anything that takes away from that has a potential chilling effect on the industry as a whole. So try to address your questions as you've asked them. I hope that I have. If there's anything else or if there's any matter that we haven't dealt with, please send over your questions.
Well, thank you.
Representing Blind SA and Section 27. I'm going to start first by playing you two very short video clips. and then I will highlight some of the matters that you wish to raise.
Thank you. Unfortunately, there is no audio.
No audio.
Yes.
We'll check on that. No audio.
So how does someone's words think?
There was a time when South Africans stood together to demand change. We stood together for equality, justice, and freedom. When it's a crime to transcribe books into Braille, freedom hasn't come far enough. Blind people experience a book famine, and sighted people don't. When a blind person's rights are affected like this, justice hasn't come far enough. It's time to stand together again. It's time to demand change.
Hashtag ending the book famine. Hashtag Braille is no crime. This oral submission is presented to the NCOP in support of the written submission we made on the 27th of January 2023. Blind Essay and Section 27. Organization profile of Section 27. The organization profile of Blind Essay. Public interest. We are generally in favor of the Copyright Amendment Bill.
Can you just work on your audio because you're not audible, Mr. Jesse?
Just give me a second. The audio is not audible.
But you're fine now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. My apologies for that. We are generally in favor of the Copyright Amendment Bill. However, there are some amendments that may be required to fall in line with the Constitutional Court the judgment of 21st September 2022. The amendments that I refer to, I will highlight a few of them in this presentation, but all of them are included in the written submission in detail, and we also provide language in certain instances, and we would be available to provide greater clarity and comment. The instruments. The focus of our submission is based on three important instruments, The first, of course, is the Copyright Amendment Bills.
Sorry, Mr. Naji, if I may, they seem to be having some difficulty transitioning from slide to slide. Can we offer to project the presentation on VPR?
Would you be able to follow me?
They want to come to a rescue, Mr. Nair. I hope it will make things much more easier for you. Might just do that, as long as it will not disrupt Mr. Nair's ability to communicate.
Okay, I'm on instruments. You can stop.
Maybe we can just stop there until then.
Let's see if you can follow with me. I'm on the slide that says instruments, and the focus is on three instruments. The first is the Copyright Amendment Bill, which is before the Select Committee at the moment. The second is the Constitutional Court judgment of 21st September 2022. The third is the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate access to published works to blind, visually impaired and other print disabled persons, which was adopted in 2013. The next slide talks to the Constitutional Court judgment of 21st September 2022.
You are aware that you have 30 minutes left, but
yes, I am aware.
Right.
Okay. The Constitutional Court focused or centered its judgment based on the need for authorization by copyright owners for us to have access to published works, and which was not forthcoming. They were also aware of the deliberations that are taking place on the Copyright Amendment Bill. If I can move on to the next slide.
Okay. Accessible format.
Accessible format. This is the first recommendation we make. Accessible formats include Braille, large print, audio, and DAISY. These are the methods that blind and partially sighted people would communicate with. And we're saying that the definition given by the Constitutional Court is in line with the Marrakesh Treaty. The next one is beneficiary persons. And we believe that there should be no change to this. The wording in the Copyright Amendment Bill includes all the disabilities, and we believe should remain. The next one that I'm going to focus on is technical protective measures. Technical protective measures limits our access to information, and the example I cite is that if a person is downloading an e-book at a library, for instance, or at a university or at a school, and they need to then have that converted into Braille, for instance, and there is no facility for that to be embossed into Braille, that facility, they will need to email that to another device so that it can then be transcribed into Braille. highlight those three aspects in terms of some of the changes that need to take place. Then I move to the slide on concluding summaries. The recommendations is in line with the Constitution of South Africa, the Copyright Amendment Bill, the Constitutional Court judgment, and the Marrakesh Treaty. The details and the language and the wording is in the written submission. The first one is on the definition of accessible formats, which I have just explained. The second one is on the definition of beneficiary persons. The third one is a definition of permitted entities. We believe that the Constitutional Court drafting of permitted entities is more inclusive and is in line with the Marrakesh Treaty. The Copyright Amendment Bill's definition of authorized entities puts the approval on regulations proclaimed by the minister, and we believe that that again creates further delays in the remedy that the Constitutional Court granted in providing immediate relief. Then I would like to focus on the next slide. In terms of section 19(1) of the Copyright Amendment Bill, this made operational immediate to the court, the Constitutional Court reading in section 13A, which firstly declared that the 1978 Copyright Act is unconstitutional to the extent that it limited our access to the right in the Bill of Rights, the equality as well as participation in cultural life. Section 13A is aligned to the Marrakesh Treaty, and the Constitutional Court made provision for its suspension or its invalidity for suspension for 2 years, so that Parliament could cure the defects in the Act, and in the interim, we would have immediate access to exceptions and limitations that would allow us for transcribing of materials into Braille and large print. We also highlight section 19(d)(2) and 3 of the CAB that would require to ensure that these provisions do not unintentionally prevent the making of accessible copies. For instance, copies of blind essay are made accessible. There's no need for another library to make that accessible, it could share that to another person who requires to read that in that accessible format. So section 28P, we believe in terms of technical protective measures, the subsection 2 should be deleted, because this again places a burden of getting authorization from the rights holders, and the Constitutional Court declared that it is unfair discrimination for blind people to go and get authorization, whereas non-blind people do not need to get authorization. Then we also, on EDGE, we support the section 12D and 19C on education and other exceptions that are granted, because these also benefit the access to information and knowledge for blind, visually impaired, and other print disabled persons. Thank you. Those are the matters that we thought that we would want to highlight in addition to the written submission that we made. The details of the amendments and the language is in the submissions, and we are available for consultation or to provide clarity on any of these points. And Chair and members of the committee, blind and partially sighted people have been living through this book famine. So it's time to end the book famine, and Braille is not a crime. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure, Mr. Jain, for that presentation. It looks like we are very clear. Just one question from my side. In light of the judgment of September 21 or 22, which was prompted by the delay which the thrust of the case of that continues to perpetuate discrimination of people with visual and print disabilities.
Recording
so
in progress.
All we're asking is for that material to be made in an accessible format. And if the publishers are able to provide that material in an accessible format, like in Braille or large print or the DAISY for us, then why would there be a need for non-profit organizations like ourselves to reproduce it? We too then can walk into a bookshop and purchase that book, or walk into a library and borrow that book that's available in an accessible format. That is all we are asking for. Who knows, this could create a niche marketing opportunity for the publishing industry to provide us with accessible formatted material so that we can have direct access to it, and we can get access to that on the same day and the same price as everybody else purchases a book or borrows a book.
Thank you, Mr. Anna, for that response. Also take this opportunity to also express my gratitude on behalf of the committee for the invitation. But I see Sonia has hand up. Madam Boshoff.
Thank you, Chair. I'm in load shedding, so I'm also losing you from time to time. I've written things in the chat section, so if we can just have a look at that.
Thank you. Let me go to that. Yes. On the chat, going back to the intellectual property section 231 of the Constitution requires us to respect all international conventions. If we expropriate an individual's IP, we will be in breach of Article 14 of the Covenant. I don't think this one will need your response. Let's go to this one. Going through all these two amendment bills will be screwing writers, musicians, filmmakers, and academics. It will also allow government to use better of textbooks so that it doesn't need to pay the textbook writer to their work. And then the other one is from Brenda. What form of challenges will people with disabilities face previously? And if this bill is amended, what will they benefit out of it? I hope you can be able to clear this chat, Mr. Ne.
Sure, certainly. If I can just talk to the current position, only 0.5% of published works is available in accessible formats. And most of it is in English, some in Afrikaans, and very little in our African languages. Therefore, it immediately limits our access to information, our access to textbooks, our access to reading material, and then that in turn limits our access to gaining access to university and tertiary institution, getting professions and qualifications so that we could make a meaningful contribution. There are exceptions of people that have been able to achieve this, but that's because of support from their families or from other institutions that enable them to get these materials produced in an accessible format. The majority of blind and partially sighted people do not get access to this basic information, and therefore all those opportunities are limited. With having access, it can create the opportunity for economic well-being, better education, access to jobs, and hopefully we would be able to become contributing members of the of our economy by contributing taxes and so forth. So these acts would immediately provide access to books that are accessible in other countries that we can bring into so that we can make. It would also make it possible for us to reproduce these books, because less than 10% of publishers have given us permission to reproduce these books. And there are very few publishers who have made accessible copies of print as well as Braille books immediately available. There are a few, but very, very few. And we're very grateful to them for that. So I think the passing of these two legislation will immediately bring an end to the book famine. It will not make us criminals, because currently the 1978 Act makes us criminals, because we are not supposed to transcribe these materials without the written approval of the rights holders.
Thank you, Rosanna, for that response. And let me again, on behalf of the committee, take this opportunity to express gratitude to you and the organization for responding. And also for responding to the, not only the invitation, but also to the tax-seeking questions that were sought by our members. I think there is the last one from Honorable Sonia, for sure. It says we must take into consideration that only 7 of 47 registered countries throughout the world are making use of fair use. So this explains why fair use is not beneficial to the writer. If we go ahead, we must adapt the fair use to our country. What is your view with regard to that?
Chair, I'm not familiar with the statistics, but I know fair use is used in a number of countries, and we support fair use, and we believe that it would provide us the opportunity to reproduce particularly educational research texts so that we can advance academically, scientifically, and so forth. So we believe fair use is not detrimental to our economy.
Thank you, Mr. Nair, for that response. Again, our gratitude to you. Any last word from you?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you very much for this opportunity. I also want to apologize for the technical glitches we have. I think that's part of what we talk about, you know, reasonable accommodation. We're grateful that the team at your office was able to step in and provide some remedial assistance. I hope that the members of the committee were able to follow the slide, but we have forwarded it to your office so that it can also be circulated in support of our written submission. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nair, for your participation. What we will then do now is to move to the next presenter. The next presenter will be from Wikimedia. If the representative of Wikimedia can take the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Can you all hear me loud and clear?
Yes, we can hear you. Mr. Gartler Scott, I see that's you on the platform.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And can you see my screen?
Yes, it is quite visible.
Fantastic. Firstly, I would like to thank thank you all for allowing me to present here today. First, a bit about the organization I'm representing, Wikimedia South Africa. I'm the point person of Wikimedia South Africa for advocacy, specifically on this issue of copyright advocacy. So Wikimedia South Africa, we are a non-profit membership organization that exists to represent Wikipedia editors and other free knowledge, free open knowledge movement people in South Africa, in the country. And we've been around since 2012.
You can just show your face, that's so that I think the public will do.
I'm afraid I do have a challenge with that. My video card is not cooperating with Zoom.
But you can
see my face in that picture, yeah. In that group photograph there. It's amongst the ocean of people there. That photograph is a group photograph from our last our last community meetup, the Wiki Indaba event that we have every year. So Wikimedia South Africa, along with the other Wikimedia chapters around the world, in addition to representing Wikipedia editors and promoting the open knowledge movement, we also promote free knowledge, and free knowledge both free as in free of cost, but also as in free to add knowledge freely that is in the public interest. And so that's essentially what Wikipedia is all about, the free online encyclopedia. Wikipedia editors, all our members are unpaid volunteers. I always encourage everyone to give Editing Wikipedia a go. So please do give Editing Wikipedia a go, just that any conflict of interest stuff. Another important thing to mention about our community is that when it comes to copyright issues, we take the strictest possible interpretation of copyright law, and that is to protect the Wikipedia project, the Open Knowledge Project, as well as to protect the unpaid volunteer editors that contribute to it. But also, very importantly, we really want to respect the copyrights of creators and people who create content. We ourselves, when we create content such as adding new sections to Wikipedia or adding content, creative content, artwork to illustrate Wikipedia or the other projects, we surrender our copyright. That's something we do voluntarily. We release it under an open copyright license. So it's all begs the question, why do we care about the CAB, the Copyright Amendment Bill? Because this is something we care very strongly about, we care very deeply about, and we have two strongly held opinions on it. And I'm going to start with the opinion that we hold most strongly, that we have most strongly. And it relates to a concept called freedom of panorama. What is freedom of panorama? I think a good way to explain what that is explaining the story of how we as a chapter got involved in the Copyright Amendment Bill. Back in 2012, one of the first things that our membership organization did was to organize a photographic competition to celebrate heritage in South Africa. It was part of the largest photographic competition in the world, Wiki Loves Monuments. It's a global competition, and we were organizing the South African component. And we really wanted to celebrate all of South Africa's heritage, especially recent heritage, such as monuments celebrating the struggle against apartheid. This is very important to us. And Wiki Loves Monuments exists to, it invites members of the public to take photographs of monuments, which are then uploaded to Commons, which is where photographs go to live in Wikipedia, so that they can be used in Wikipedia to illustrate Wikipedia articles. Now, one of our, we announced the competition. About a week later, one of our members, very correctly it turned out, pointed out to us that what we were doing was opening us up and our participants and the Wikipedia project up to litigation. It was exposing us. And the reason why, and it was also a violation of the strictest possible interpretation of copyright law. And the part that was in violation was the fact that we were inviting members of the public to take photographs of publicly visible works of art, that were recently made, in addition to the old ones, right? So essentially what we had to do, and this photograph that you can see here illustrates what this means. It means that we could not accept photographs of recently built public works of art, but we could accept photographs of old works of art, of old publicly visible works of art, old public works. And the example here, which is a very good one, in the Nelson Mandela statue outside the Union Buildings, that is recently built. We cannot, on Wikipedia, we cannot accept photographs of this statue and other statues like it in South Africa. But you'll notice that the facade of the Union Building in the background is not censored out. And that's because we can accept those because the copyright on that has expired. Things in South Africa, we have 50 years plus life of the author. The Union Building was built more than 100 years ago, exceeding 50 years plus life of the author. It is safe for us to host images of these works on Wikipedia. The Nelson Mandela statue is unclear who exactly owns the copyright, but one thing is clear is that it's recently built. We might maybe be in exposing ourselves to litigation if we host this image on Wikipedia. Now, it's not the photograph itself, not the copyright of the photograph itself that's the problem. I took this photograph. And I donated this photograph to the Commons. I uploaded it under a Creative Commons license. What is the problem is the distribution of the likeness of the public work of art, the statue, right? That's the problem here. And in South African law, it's very vague as to whether or not that is exempt from copyright or not. Most countries, increasingly more and more countries, have a freedom of panorama clause that clarifies this area of law and says public works, work situation in public spaces are meant to be viewed by the public, freely shared by the public, and so are exempt from this from this type of copyright protection, which means that Wikipedia can use it to illustrate articles on Wikipedia. Good illustration of again, how this impacts us, as you'll see on the other side of my screen, there's the Wikipedia article for Rhodes Memorial. We can illustrate Rhodes Memorial, right? Because Rhodes Memorial, the copyright on the facade of Rhodes Memorial and the statues there within has expired. So that we can do. In other countries, like the United Kingdom, Australia, India as well, they got freedom of panorama. Austria invented the term freedom of panorama. They can feature photographs of public monuments freely, recently built ones freely, without any problem, because they've got this clause. The current Copyright Amendment Bill has got a freedom of panorama clause in it. And that is a very big reason why we support the current Copyright Amendment Bill, is because it's got freedom of panorama. If, when the bill passes into law, we will be able to illustrate South African monuments, all South African monuments, on Wikipedia, and we won't just be restricted to only illustrating colonial era monuments. We really want to represent all of South Africa's heritage, and at the moment I have the time. A good illustration of why the ambiguity matters is that in Sweden a couple of years ago, they have a very similar situation to us, where there's no clarity as to whether or not they've got freedom of panorama. They don't have freedom of panorama, and there's no clarity about whether or not people can take photographs of public works of art, and freely share them. Someone took a photograph of a recently built fountain, and it was located in a street. The organization that owned the fountain sued the individual that took that photograph. The person put the photograph onto Wikipedia. There's an important backstory there. The organization that owned the fountain sued that individual who donated the photograph for use on Wikipedia. And Wikimedia Sweden then represented that person in court. And Wikimedia Sweden lost. The organization that owned the fountain won. And Wikimedia Sweden had to pay out roughly the equivalent of 2 million rand. Which shows you how much the average South African citizen is exposed to possible litigation and what the costs of that are without a freedom of panorama clause. I would also strongly argue that a lack of freedom of panorama clause, as things currently are South African law, exposes average South African citizens to unintentional criminalization, because it's normal for people in South Africa to take photographs of public works, share them over the internet with their friends or on social media. In fact, the last time I presented on this to Parliament, I saw a group of parliamentarians taking selfies of themselves with the newly installed statue, the bust of Nelson Mandela, and then sharing it on Twitter. Now, those parliamentarians were at risk of litigation. They were essentially, arguably, breaking the law because we don't have freedom of panorama currently. The CAB fixes this. The next section, so I'm going to try and be brief on fair use and why Wikimedia South Africa supports fair use, but I will say that terms such as are good because they help expand the flexibility of the fair use doctrine, and fair use grants copyright exceptions for that are judged to be in the interests of the public, you know, public good exceptions of copyright. It doesn't mean that a person can photocopy an entire textbook without paying the author. That is not true. Fair use will criminalize a person who does that. You know, a person who does that is still liable to criminal prosecution. Anyone who says that is just wrong or is just ignorant of what fair use works and is. Fair use comes from the United States. The United States has a very strict, has a very robust copyright law system, and if you photograph a textbook in the United States, an entire textbook, you will be liable for prosecution by the publishers, and quite rightly so. But I will say that the current status of a lack of fair use in South Africa does limit South African creators. Basically, essentially, it means that the rest of the world, because so many other countries, increasingly more and more countries are adopting fair use. Countries that have fair use can freely use and benefit from the work of South African creators in this public benefit, in this flexible public benefit way, where South Africans cannot do the same. And it is important to mention that fair use is a relatively new concept, which is why only about 7 countries currently adopt it. The first country to adopt it, America, they invented the term, is very resistant to new countries adopting fair use because they recognize part of the secret source of their technological development and advancement, but I'll cover that a little bit later. Fair use at its heart protects publicly beneficial uses of copyrighted works. I already sort of went over the details of what that means. Introduction of fair use into South African law, as this current bill does, better protects South Africans when we, both domestically and foreign, when we criticize copyrighted works in art and reporting and research. You know, these public benefit pro-social exceptions for copyright uses, right? Where it's in the public interest to temporarily put aside the copyrights of the original author. Sometimes it's even in the author's own interest because oftentimes copyright accepted uses can act as free advertising. A good example of that is in Google searches, right? Google backs up the entire internet, and that enables Google to more efficiently find the website you're looking for. Now, that also acts as free advertising. That was the judgment of the American courts a couple of years ago when this was challenged in their system. On Wikipedia, fair use plays an important role in contextualizing facts and illuminating knowledge. And we want South Africans to be able to share our knowledge with the world, and fair use is a very important part of that. And I already mentioned that fair use is good for development of domestic technology companies. Countries such as Singapore and Israel, which have got a very robust development policy to develop high technology industries and the art sectors, have adopted fair use because they know it is good for the development of these new technology industries. It will be good for South African technology companies as well. Now, America has famously resisted other countries adopting their own legal system of fair use, their own legal doctrine of fair use. The argument there, and I think there's fair bit to it, the accusation, is that the Americans don't want to give away the secret source of their technology development, of what fuels American technological prowess, right? Fair use is a very important part of that. And famously, the Americans resisted Israel, in particular Israel's adoption of fair use. And that is why there's a small number of countries that have fair use, but the number is growing. And so the adoption of fair use in South Africa is another reason why Wikimedia South Africa supports the Copyright Amendment Bill. And I will end it there, and I'll leave us on the slide, which we care most about, freedom of panorama, and I'm open to questions. Thank you, everyone. Any questions?
Mr. Kalimai?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
No, sorry, Mr. Scott, I'm just asking for the chairperson, Mr. Moyama.
My apologies. I was muted. I was speaking to myself. My apologies for that. Number three, any clarification questions? It's quite clear from Wikimedia. The concern to them is the qualification of the use in order to celebrate the sharing of a celebration of the sharing of photographs of public monuments that are recent. I think it's quite clear, and sharing of that over the internet to celebrate the victory over where we come from. I think that was quite clear. In the absence of any other questions, then thank you, Mr. Scott, from Wikimedia, for your for you honoring the presentation and the invite that we issued to the public. We got the essence of what is the thrust of Mr. Scott's presentation. We will now move over to the next presentation, which I believe will be the South African South African Institute of Intellectual Property Law, law on intellectual property. Yes, there's just a sense with the, I think it's Mr. Hollis. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I audible?
Very audible, Mr. Hollis.
Thank you very much. It's still morning, I see. So good morning to you. Good morning to the honourable members of the Select Committee. And thank you very much for this opportunity for the Institute, South African Institute of Intellectual Property Law, to make a presentation today. Just for a bit of background, the Institute was established in 1954 and has members approximately 200 lawyers who are specialists in intellectual property law, including copyright. We've participated in calls for comment on the Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Bill when it was first introduced as a single bill in Parliament in 2015, and also when the bills were processed separately from 2017 to 2022. Sorry, we've got a little bit of interference.
Our apologies, Mr. Hollis.
No problem.
Newman, you can just mute yourself so that our proceedings can run smoothly. Our apologies again, Mr. Hollis. Over to you.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. CIPL agrees that the Copyright Act and the Performance Act need to be updated for the digital age, and that changes are long overdue. A written submission shows that the bills will not achieve that, however, and even harm the authors that the copyright bill is intended to benefit. If I may just share my screen, I don't have many slides, Mr. Chair, with your permission.
Permission granted.
Thank you, Chair. Now, our written submission was compiled by members of the Institute's Copyright Law Committee, who are attorneys and advocates who practice in the specialist field of copyright law. Our written submission is extensive. It's almost 100 pages long. Our comments are organized into 28 thematically related topics, each spanning a set of provisions in the Copyright Amendment Bill or the Performance Protection Amendment Bill or both. And our analysis shows of these provisions that most of the new sections and amendments that the Copyright Amendment Bill seeks to introduce are problematic to a greater or to a lesser extent. A material part of the provisions to be introduced by the Performance Amendment Bill also needs attention. Now, in addition, our submission notes some topics that should have been dealt with by the bills to bring the legislation into the digital age, but were not. Such a comprehensive submission might come across as surprising at this late stage in the process. And the simple reason for this is that after the President referred the bills back to the National Assembly for concerns about constitutionality and compliance with international treaties, the National Assembly deliberately limited the scope of further public participation to the President's reservations. This was despite protests from numerous stakeholders and guidance from a judgment of the Constitutional Court. With the bills not being fit for purpose and now being dealt with under Section 76 of the Constitution, the NCOP and, by extension, the Select Committee must consider the extensive range of problems that apply across all of the provisions of the bill. Now, unlike our earlier submissions, this submission does not raise our concerns about procedural omissions relating to the bills as a self-standing topic. These concerns include the National Assembly's accepting the bills without a proper economic impact assessment under government's own internal rules, its reliance on the advice of a single group of stakeholders to support the bills, and a history of short and inadequate notice periods for comments, and also the limitations placed on the scope for comments that I've just mentioned. And our position in relation to these concerns remain unchanged. Now, as we will not have sufficient time for me today to speak in detail on all of the key issues we identified, this presentation aims to provide a very high-level overview and to provide some practical guidance. And should Select Committee members wish for the Institute to provide a more comprehensive legal briefing or a workshop on the issues identified in our written submission, we would, of course, be very glad to do so. Now, the most contentious provisions in the bills include the introduction of fair use and extensive copyright exceptions, as well as the insufficient legal protections for technological protection measures. Now, these two topics were expressly raised by the President in his referral back of the bills, yet very few changes were made to them. And there was no report to the President as to why they were considered to be in order. Other contentious provisions are the non-waivable statutory royalty entitlements for authors and performers to receive royalties and shares in gross profits of copyright owners, the 25-year limitation on the term of assignment for all literary and musical works, and also on the transfer of performers' rights, and the blanket contract override provision, as well as the overly broad regulatory powers granted to the minister to arbitrarily limit contractual freedom. Our submission also found numerous problems with other provisions, which ranges from unconstitutional deprivation of property and non-compliance with international treaties to simple and basic drafting errors that remain in the bill. Now, in undertaking an exercise as complex as an extensive amendment of copyright and related rights legislation, we expect there to be informed direction from government that from the government that proposes evidence-based legislation. Instead, the conceptualization and the drafting of the bill does not seem to be based on informed policy. There was no proper socioeconomic impact assessment system or SAIS reports, the absence of which opens provisions in the bills to many unintended consequences. And there does not even seem to be a single published policy document underlying the bills. A key flaw in the drafting seems to be that the drafters tried to apply a quick fix solution to identified and perceived problems by simply extrapolating new rights and exceptions that apply to one class of works across all works and across all industries in an arbitrary one-size-fits-all solution, or approach, I should say, not solution. The application of copyright impacts in practice on a broad range of commercially unrelated industries, some of which are shown here on the screen for illustration. Each industry sector and also its subsectors depend on copyright in different ways to finance and secure investment for new creative content production projects, and they operate with different rights management and remuneration models that are driven by market specifics in their sector and also consumer demand in each sector. Now, legislative intervention in one industry needs a solution that is not replicated without reason into other industries where the same problems do not exist. The extrapolation errors in the bill alone results in easy fixes to the legislation simply not being possible. Now, for example, with the new Section 7A, the statutory entitlements to an unwaivable royalty for artists who are makers of artistic works, having been largely inspired by the needle time provisions for music sound recordings that exist in Section 9A of the Act, it serves no purpose to try to fix the provisions in 7A if the circumstances relating to needle time just do not exist in respect of artistic works, which they don't. Chair, the supposed benefit of Section 7A is just an illusion. 7A will not bring economic benefits for creators of most kinds of artistic works. Another example is the erroneous miscasting of a 25-year reversion right for musicians, as was recommended in the Copyright Review Commission report originally, and in the bill it turned into a limit on the term of all assignments of copyright in all literary and musical works. Now, this also affects, for instance, the assignment of rights in computer source code, which is a literary work. When the reversion right recommended in the CRC report did not intend to extend its application beyond the music industry, yet this was done in the bill. So the root problems with the bills is that it was drafted largely based on an ideological perspective, unsupported by policy or assessment, that copyright is an obstacle that should be overcome to advance technological innovation, education, and research objectives in South Africa. This was stated by the DTI at a rather extraordinary event that it co-hosted with Google and the Freedom of Expression Institute a week before the first public hearings on the bill in 2017. Now, at this event, DTI unveiled that it decided to adopt a user-centric approach to copyright protection based on research that it conducted that revealed that copyright is a trade barrier that is preventing the growth of all of our copyright industries and that it is not an economic tool for development. Now, this is an alarming statement to make, considering that copyright is the very foundation on which trade is initiated and facilitated in all of our copyright industries. The underlying research that informed the DTI's policy shift was not published for public consideration and comment. It was not informed by comprehensive stakeholder engagement in the affected industries or a proper economic impact assessment. And the outcome of this was a copyright bill that proposes to turn the existing copyright law framework on its head through the introduction of arguably the broadest and the most invasive regime of new copyright exceptions of any copyright law in the world. There was even talk of a novel concept of so-called user rights, which were cast as proactive rights for users to disregard copyright protections in many instances. And even though the casting of these provisions as user rights has been abandoned, the slogan was simply reformulated as recreator rights or even creator rights. And as a clan policy position of a hybrid model of copyright exceptions grounded in fair use. Mr. Chair, there was no material change to the copyright exceptions that had their origin in the now abandoned user rights slogan. And that's despite fierce opposition by the overwhelming majority of creative industry stakeholders and serious concerns raised consistently from the onset from the legal fraternity. The Institute is not opposed to new copyright exceptions per se. There is evidentiary and legal support for an extended personal use exception, also an exception for temporary reproduction as part of a mechanical process to enable transmission of copyright works in a network of computers. The Institute fully supports the introduction of a new exception for the blind and visually impaired that would enable South Africa's accession to the Marrakesh Treaty. But the Institute also counsels the NCOP to take heed of the implications of the Constitutional Court's recent decision in the blind SA case for why it did not direct that the bill's new Section 19D be read into our law. We respectfully submit that the National Assembly's Portfolio Committee erred when it took the decision to attempt to fix the errors in the bill in committee. And not rejecting the fundamentally flawed bills at that early stage after the 2017 public hearings. In the process, the Portfolio Committee inadvertently introduced new problematic provisions that were not subjected to economic impact assessment or full stakeholder consultation, notably the new statutory royalty entitlements for authors of literary and musical works, visual artistic works, and also performers featured in audiovisual works. Now, it's our expectation that if the bills are persisted with, then its copyright exceptions and the failure to protect technological protection measures, as raised in the President's referral decision, at the very least will be referred to the Constitutional Court, and thereby adding probably another 2 years to a process that has already lasted 6 years from when the bills were introduced in Parliament as separate bills, and 12 years from the date the Copyright Review Commission handed its report to the Minister. Now, if the Constitutional Court were then to find the bills to be unconstitutional, which we think is quite possible in respect of the bills as they stand now, it'll be necessary to return to the drawing board, which will be a major setback. Because the NCOP is processing the bills in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution, we understand that the options of the NCOP are limited to the process made provision for in the Constitution, namely to accept, reject, or counter-propose a new bill. We contend that the NCOP should not accept the bills for any number of the reasons we have given in our written submission. The NCOP could counter-propose with other bills and come to a mediated solution with the National Assembly, but without evidence and proper legal advice that has been lacking so far, we do not see this as a practical solution. It is our recommendation that the bills be rejected and that they be allowed to lapse in Parliament. Government should be asked to write new bills that do not suffer from the same flaws and that they follow the correct intra-governmental procedures, notably the socioeconomic impact assessment system, the intellectual property policy of the Republic of South Africa, phase one of 2018, and taking counsel from the about to be reconstituted Standing Advisory Committee for Intellectual Property. CIPL suggests that once the bills are rejected, that the revision of the Act could take place swiftly and in two stages. The first stage should be to amend the Copyright Act in limited respects and to replace the Performance Protection Act. the amendments to the Act could be focused on the implementation of the recommendations of the Copyright Review Commission and to introduce amendments to align the Act with the WIPO Copyright Treaty and the Marrakesh Treaty. And inasmuch as there's an urgent need for new exceptions for the reproduction right for the benefit of educational institutions and libraries having a public character, the Minister can introduce them instantly by regulation under Section 13 of the Act. A new Performance Protection Amendment Bill could be drafted for proper alignment with the WIPO Performances and Phonograms Treaty, WPPT, and also the Beijing Treaty on Audiovisual Performances that would grant legal protection also to Indigenous performances and performers of Indigenous works. Now, with the work that has already been done, it should be possible to compile such bills and process them through Parliament quite quickly. And then stage two of the process would involve an in-depth revision of the Copyright Act that could perhaps even be to such an extent that the bill proposes a replacement of the current Act. And with that, I thank you for your kind attention, Mr. Chair and honourable members, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Hollis, for the comprehensive response. Let me identify from the floor. I see there are some points raised by Honorable Boshoff on the platform. The 25 element, if enacted, will prevent any party from agreeing to the reading rights that in the Copyright Amendment Bill. In other words, the user law becomes the creator. Let's just compare ourselves to that. I think maybe you might comment, because look, I think we quite appreciate the thrust of your presentation, Mr. Hollis, and it's very detailed indeed, because it also it was comments on several provisions in the subject, which is quite detailed, and we also identify subjects that have not been covered by the Copyright Amendment Bill. And you in your recommendation you also made some presentations, and what is quite categorical is that we must reject the bill. And the government should allow the bill to last in terms of your